It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, to run down another division preview is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, you ready to discuss some NFC North today?
Yeah, man. And just got to take the time here. It's Memorial Day. Yes, got to thank everybody that sacrificed to make this country a better place. The ultimate sacrifice. And it allows us to do what we're doing right now, man. So definitely needed to address that. And just obviously that's what this day's about. Also, Elliot tweeted it, but I want to shout out John Kelly too. John Kelly, you know, is our UFC analyst, but serving the country, man. Like, shout out to John Kelly. We appreciate you. And we appreciate everybody that has served, continues to serve, means more than you will ever know.
Dude, I can't even quantify that type of sacrifice, man. And again, I echo every single thing that you just said. I personally have a lot of family members that have served, are serving. Shout out to my dad who served in the Vietnam War. Shout out to my father-in-law who, good God, man, that dude's done so much for, he was a Fulbright colonel in the Army. That type of sacrifice and service is something that we all need to tip our caps to, and really, really, you need to make a concentrated effort to sit and reach out to those that you know that are serving and have served, and let them know how much that means to you. Because I mean, that's what we're here for, man. I mean, we're not able to sit here and I know we talk about a lot of stuff on a lighter note on this podcast, but getting real for a second, whole reason when we have our freedoms, entire reason why we're you hit the nail on the head, man. Why we're able to do what we do and sit here and talk about a game about a game. So, absolutely agree. Happy Memorial Day, and we really, really appreciate everybody.
Yeah, I mean, just like you said, like the ultimate sacrifice to have that kind of, you know, selflessness. Just like you said, tip your cap, and it means more than you'll ever know. And I think it's a good point what you mentioned too. Like, reach out if you know anybody that served or is serving. It's important to understand just how huge of a sacrifice they have made and they are continuing to make for this country.
I don't think unless you've seen people that have lived it and have at least like some kind of like small and even not even walking in their shoes, some small inkling of what that all entails, people just don't understand, man. So reach out to people. Let them know how much you appreciate it, because it really does mean something, man. All right, dude, let's dive into the NFC North here. Talking about a guy that is still rocking the green and gold, or yellow? Anyway. Aaron Rodgers, still with the Cheeseheads, dude. I know we've discussed this on previous shows, but what's the impact, and do you think he stays, or does he go, man? How does this all look on both sides of that coin?
Dude, I have no clue. Like, he went on that final SportsCenter with Kenny Mayne and pretty much, like, said he loves everybody in Green Bay outside of management. And it's like, if that doesn't get solved, then it doesn't seem like Aaron Rodgers is going to come back. So it's all speculation right now. But what we can do is, okay, look, if Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers in 2021, 2022, Davante Adams is the number one receiver in fantasy, or he should be drafted as that at least. Aaron Jones should be a borderline first-round pick, and Robert Tonyan's a top 12 tight end. That's kind of easy, right? The thing, like, because imagine if you're doing drafts now, especially like best balls and stuff like that, Davante Adams is sliding to like the second round. Late second in some spots.
Wow.
If Aaron Rodgers comes back, that's going to be ridiculous value for Davante Adams, who should be a top seven pick. Like, if we knew Rodgers, if these reports with Rodgers were not, you know, they didn't surface and he was happy in Green Bay and we were good to go, he would be literally a top seven pick, right? It'd be like the first five or six running backs and then Davante Adams. So if Aaron Rodgers isn't there, is Devontae Adams going to be as efficient and as great as he's been? No. A lot of that is just, you know, a huge part of that is just timing routes with these two. Their rapport is unmatched. It's the best in the NFL. But Devontae Adams is going to be a good player with Jordan Love. Like, he's not going to be all of a sudden a guy that catches 60 balls for 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. Like, he's going to score double-digit touchdowns. It's just, is he going to be worthy of taking over Tyreek Hill, over Stephon Diggs, over DeAndre Hopkins, if he goes from Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love?
I absolutely agree, man. I think that, like, all of the points that you made about Aaron Rodgers, if he's there, yeah, I mean, all these rankings are pretty much, I mean, it's all easy. You're not doing any kind of complex math here. But if Aaron Rodgers is gone, then I think that, and I've discussed this previously, I would view Devontae Adams in the same bucket that I put DeAndre Hopkins in when he had crap quarterback play.
Right, pre Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, basically, I mean, like, he's going to get the volume, he's going to get the red zone looks, he's going to be a top 15 wide receiver, where you want to put him in that range. Like, I think for me, he would fall into the mid to low end wide receiver one range. And I'd have to go through and, like, parse, like, okay, what about this player and this player? Like, because without Aaron Rodgers there, it's not that the volume is going to change for him. Outside of, like, are they able to extend drives? Is Jordan Love going to be just that bad? Really, it comes down to me and what moves the needle the most, and we've talked about it, like, every single time Devontae Adams has been healthy and on a field, is the touchdown equity he has in this offense. But in saying that, he still will be one of the main cogs inside the red zone, but how often do they get into the red zone is the problem. So I know you mentioned double-digit touchdowns. I would push him a shade below that, like probably like in the 8 touchdown range, which pushing him outside of that drops him from the wide receiver 1, wide receiver 3 overall in wide receiver rankings to a low-end wide receiver 1, high-end 2. And that's fine, man, because he's going to still do what you've expected him to do on a lot of different weeks, and that's garner a ton of volume, have an immensely, immensely high floor, but the week-winning ceilings possibly, I mean, are they still there? Is that still in his wheelhouse? Sure. Are we going to see that with as much frequency? Probably not. So that's where I would change with this offense. Aaron Jones would take a hit again. Aaron Jones has been, we've always discussed Aaron Jones, he's not a volume play. Aaron Jones is an efficiency play. You and I have already talked about, like, some of the concerns that we have about the Green Bay Packers offensive line. But for me, it would be a downtick in the efficiency of this offense and how that's going to trickle down to a player who's really made his bank off of efficiency. So, you know, I would bump Aaron Jones down into, I mean, he would not be an RB1 for me, a high-end 2, at least at that point. Just based off of that, I think that, like, there are other running backs around him that I think would hop him as far as what that would look like. And then Tonyan's not even a tight end 1 without Aaron Rodgers. But do you have any pushback? Like, would you be a little bit higher on Aaron Jones than what I'm saying?
No, I mean, right now I have my rankings as if Aaron Rodgers is going to be under center for the Green Bay Packers, and Aaron Jones is, like, my RB8 or 9. Okay. So, like, yeah, he's outside the top 12 easily if Aaron Rodgers isn't there. Not because of the talent. We know he's been one of the most efficient running backs in the NFL since entering the league. The problem is, like you said, he's been seeing, like, kind of like Alvin Kamara type usage, whereas we want him to see, you know, Jonathan Taylor down the stretch last year usage, Ezekiel Elliott usage, because he's that good. And yes, Jamal Williams is gone, but who's to say they don't give A.J. Dillon that same Jamal Williams role? It's the same coaching staff and everything. And a lot of Aaron Jones' huge weeks have been scoring touchdowns. If they're not getting inside the red zone as often, that hurts him if he's not getting 25 touches a game, if he's only getting 17, which 17 Aaron Jones touches is still good because he's so efficient, and he's going to catch a fair amount of passes, especially if he's playing more in passing downs, because Jamal Williams was so important to Aaron Rodgers in pass situations. But yeah, like, if there's no Aaron Rodgers, like, it's an easy kind of tiebreaker if you have him ranked closely with guys like Austin Eckler or Joe Mixon or Najee Harris. Like, I would probably put him below those guys. I already have him below Eckler, but and then you have this still, I know he got signed to that 4-year deal, and you would think, okay, they gave him the money, now they're gonna just absolutely give him all the work. But, like, they could easily still just give A.J. Dillon the 10 touches per game Jamal Williams got last year. And then we're in the same situation where Aaron Jones could be a top five running back still based off efficiency, but if that efficiency goes down because the offensive efficiency goes down without Rodgers, like you would then need him to get those 20 touches per game, 20 plus touches per game. So it's a lot trickier with Aaron Jones. And then, yeah, Robert Tonyan, it's like you can find another tight end you feel better about if Aaron Rodgers isn't there. So it's like it's simple to break down this Packers offense, but at the same time it's not because there's that huge wrinkle of whether Aaron Rodgers will be there or not.
Well, and to the other side of the coin, I mean, we talked about the running back group. I mean, if Aaron Rodgers is not in town, I think that we also could see them move towards more of a run-heavy approach. And then are we talking about A.J. Dillon not getting like 8 to 10 touches, but is he getting 12 to 15 touches and, you know, garnering a lot of the early down work, you know? And I just think that we could see a shift in this offensive philosophy to really make things easier for Jordan Love, as opposed to what we see now, man. I mean, look, I've never been the biggest A.J. Dillon fan. I was not enamored with him as a prospect coming out. I was immensely surprised that he was selected as high as he was in the NFL draft. I've always thought that the Derrick Henry comparisons are terrible. They're absolutely horrible because that's like, every time that somebody compares a wide receiver prospect to Tyreek Hill, it's bad. It's horrible. You shouldn't be doing this. It's the same thing when somebody compares a running back prospect to freaking Derrick Henry. Don't do that. We don't compare prospects to unicorn players. It just doesn't happen, and it won't work out well for you. I mean, A.J. Dillon has, look, I don't think that he could fully usurp and take that Jamal Williams role for last year because I don't believe in his pass-catching acumen. I just don't think that he's that good as far as being a receiver outside of the backfield. So I think the best that you're hoping for with A.J. Dillon is that he's a high-end handcuff, that if Aaron Jones were to miss any time, would he just gobble up the early down role? Yes, probably. The other thing that we need to talk about here is Kylin Hill is in the house, man. Kylin Hill is no slouch. Like, he's not the most athletic prospect, didn't get a ton of draft capital. But again, if we're parsing out roles and looking at this backfield, I don't think it's insane, especially as much draft capital as they tied into A.J. Dillon. Like, is he probably the best, like, idea for their backup? Yes. Could Kylin Hill take that job? Because he is in a way better wide receiver out of the backfield. With the running back group, could he take that Jamal Williams role? I don't think it's absolutely out of the question, Adam. I really, really don't. But, I mean, what are your thoughts, man? I'm not the biggest Kylin Hill fan as far as, like, his vision and his abilities as a rusher. But as a receiver, do you think A.J. Dillon's the definitive handcuff here? Or could Kylin Hill possibly steal that role?
I would be pretty surprised, especially with the draft capital they gave A.J. Dillon. If he wasn't the backup or, like I said, or the Jamal Williams role where he's technically the backup, but he's getting 10 touches a game. Williams averaged just over 10 touches per game last year. And Dillon was really good in the one opportunity we saw him get a lot of work. I mean, that game against, I think it was Tennessee, late in the season, 124 yards and 2 touchdowns on 21 carries in week 16. So I don't think Kylin Hill is really going to push A.J. Dillon out of the way or anything like that. And then, like, Dillon's a guy that you can make sense as a later round running back pick, especially if you, you know, go receiver, tight end heavy or whatever, and you're not thrilled with the running back situation, or if you have Aaron Jones, why not just take A.J. Dillon, you know, in the 9th round or whatever? And yeah, like, if Jones misses time, which he has in the past, I mean, Dillon would be, without Rodgers, probably like a top 15 to 17 running back, and with Rodgers, he would push top 12 potential.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see it, man. I think
one last question too before we get out of Green Bay.
Oh yeah,
how much do we care about Amari Rodgers?
I don't. I really,
regardless
don't.
Of Aaron.
No, I don't. I think that
okay.
Where everybody is so thirsty to, and this still persists, Adam. There are certain situations that, like, year after year after year, we're like, okay, who's the wide receiver 2 going to be on this team? Who's the tight end that's going to catch passes? And I'm like, okay. I mean, the answer could easily be nobody. And this is one of the prevailing things that, like, we see year after year. It's like, okay, I want the wide receiver, too, in Green Bay. He's going to be good because Aaron Rodgers is good. It's like, I mean, yes and no. Probably not, because they spread the ball around behind Davante Adams. So, for me, the wide receiver, 2 conversation in Green Bay is just no. Like,
right. It's not like it's his next team we'll talk about where they throw a lot to 2 guys.
Yeah.
You know, 3 guys, really.
I mean, the thing of it is that Amari Rodgers is not a fantastic prospect. I know everybody wants to talk about what he did in his final year at Clemson. That was more, in my belief, out of necessity than it was out of talent, because he didn't break out into the final season of Clemson. They didn't have anybody else to freaking throw the ball to. Like, Clemson's leading pass catchers was Travis Etienne, Cornell freaking Powell, and Amari Rodgers. That doesn't spell good things for Amari Rodgers. Like, oh, Amari Rodgers is an amazing talent. You go look at his analytical profile, it's not great, Adam. So, no, I don't really put too much stock in Amari Rodgers. I went other ways in rookie dynasty drafts. And I'm not just, like, just trying to throw shade at the guy, but I don't believe that all the hope and promise and everything we believe could be for him as the wide receiver, too, in Green Bay is really that high of a ceiling, or at least as high as people want it to be. Moving over to the Minnesota Vikings, man, this is going to be a concentrated passing attack, concentrated offense. We know the parts and pieces where the ball is going to go in this offense. I'm going to kick this off, man. I know you were pounding the table for Adam Thielen last year. Pounding the table for him. Are you back in for Thielen this year?
So, yeah, I was like, I was drafting Adam Thielen over so many players. This time around, I'm not avoiding him, but I'm not as bullish, just because we clearly saw, as much as I love Thielen, Jefferson, you know, in his rookie year, take that step as the number one in this offense. He out-targeted Thielen 125 to 108. Now, these two combined for just over 48% of the Minnesota targets. So, like, that's elite level numbers. That's like close to like the Broncos days of Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, where they were like well over 50% of the team's targets. So that's what we want. But Thielen's yardage was bad last year. Like, he had a lot of games where touchdowns saved him, and he's a great touchdown scorer, but at the same time, I don't expect 14 touchdowns again. So like Thielen, where I was drafting him well above his ADP last year, I'm kind of like fine with him where he's going now. But also you have a situation where like receiver is once again absolutely loaded. And there's a lot of really high upside players. And Thielen, the reason I loved him so much entering last season is because, okay, the only competition he had was a rookie who at the time we didn't know if Justin Jefferson was going to be this good. Obviously he is. Now there's less certainty that he's going to be the clear-cut guy, because he's not. I mean, think about it. Last year at this time, Minnesota went into the season with, because remember Justin Jefferson was like the third wide receiver on the depth chart in camp because he wasn't apparently picking up the offense. So it was like BC Johnson as a number two. So
yeah, BC Johnson was going to start over him. I remember that narrative.
But it's like at the same time, that's one of the reasons why Thielen was so intriguing to me, is because he had no experience and no real competition for targets until Justin Jefferson obviously broke out. So now it changes with Jefferson clearly being a star. So I'm not really like afraid to draft Adam Thielen. I'm just not like sprinting the card up, so to speak, on draft day to select him like I was last year.
Yeah, I'm look, man, I know that we've been captaining and driving the bus about like another player that we are going to get to in this episode. I'll be honest, man, like I'm a little bit down on this passing attack. Like, I think that for all the reasons like that you stated that you liked Adam Thielen, like with the Justin Jefferson stuff, with like his role in this offense, do I think that Adam Thielen is gonna reprise a massive red zone role? Yes. Is he going as late in drafts this year that we saw last year? No, man. He's not. Right now, he is the wide receiver 21 right now going off the board.
Yeah, so I actually like him a little bit more than ADP, because I have him as wide receiver 19. But like last year, I had him like wide receiver 9. So it's like, it's okay. Still a huge difference.
But here's my thing. Okay, here's a few of the wide receivers, and I want you to tell me, are you going to pick this wide receiver, or are you going Adam Thielen, man?
Okay.
Robert Woods or Adam Thielen?
I mean, just choose two of my favorite receivers in the NFL, why don't you?
I am!
It's Robert Woods.
Okay. And all of these players are going within, like, 5 to 6 picks of Adam Thielen, just so people are aware of, like, how close this is. Ja'Marr Chase or Adam Thielen?
I have Thielen a couple spots higher.
Okay, Tyler Lockett or Adam Thielen?
I have Thielen higher.
Cooper Kupp or Adam Thielen?
They are literally 19 and 20.
And that's about the range, man. And I just, look, I think the Minnesota passing attack, from a volume standpoint, could take a step back, dude. And yeah,
talked about this. You think their defense is going to take a huge step up. And last year, you were pounding the table on how bad their defense was going to be.
I think their defense is going to take a massive step forward. Like, I think it's bounce back season. I think, and for me, that makes Dalvin Cook immensely valuable. Like, he cannot escape the top three picks.
He's the unquestioned second overall pick, in my opinion. I don't think it's like if you want to make the case as the RB, as the 101, if you're worried about McCaffrey or whatever, that's fine too. But like, without a doubt, he should not be drafted. I don't think he should be drafted outside the top two. And like you said, definitely not outside the top three.
I don't disagree, man. And that's why I'm honestly down on these passing attack options. This defense, and for people that need to sit here and kind of quantify, like, how much is coming back to this defense, Michael Pierce opted out. Daniel Hunter is coming back. Anthony Barr missed a ton of time. They signed Xavier Woods. They signed Patrick Peterson. Like, this defense is going to be so, so much better than it was last year, dude. Like, and if that's the case, I think the Vikings are going to lean on the run game. I think the passing volume is going to... I think it's going to disappoint us, man. I really do. And it's not to say that they can't be effective. They can't be efficient. But if we're talking about, like, you need the volume to produce. Like, you still need that to happen. So I'll be honest, man. Like, I'm down on Thielen. I'm down on Justin Jefferson. A lot of different, and there's a lot of other points that I'm going to make about it. You need to head over to FTN Fantasy later this week. I might be writing up something about Justin Jefferson. But in discussing all of these other passing attack options, are we still in for Let Irv Swerve? Like, hashtag Let Irv Swerve. Is that going to be a thing this year? Like, are we still in for it?
And you know what helps, too? Is that tight end is just so bad after the top seven. So, a little bit of a limited sample, but we saw the games where Irv Smith played without Kyle Rudolph last year. Weeks 14 through 17, Rudolph was out of the lineup. In those games, Irv was the tight end 4 in fantasy. He averaged just under 13 fantasy points per game. Had 4 end zone targets during that span, which was tied for the most among all tight ends. Like, we know he's a downfield capable, you know, tight end. I think he was top 10 in both yards per target and yards per reception at the position. Like, the talent is immense. He's still super young, and now he's going to be, you know, getting way more routes run. He doesn't have to get, you know, Dallas Goedert. Obviously, he's not going to get like Kelce or Waller type usage, but like even like Dallas Goedert type usage, like 8 targets a game, he can get 6 targets a game, be a top 7 tight end. Kirk Cousins has always been super efficient and nobody talks about it. I'm still on Irv Smith. And again, it would be different if tight end was really loaded in that range, but it's like, okay, you have Kelce, Waller, Kittle, Hockenson, Andrews, Pitts, Goedert. I think that's the consensus top 7. And then it's like, okay, we like Firkser, but he's not like a lock by any means. And then you have Noah Fant and Logan Thomas, who did it for 1 year. Tonyan, we already talked about. The New England the New England situation made tight ends so much worse, because it's like you literally lost 2 tight end ones, because they're Jonnu and Hunter Henry could both, like, you know, eat away at each other's potential. So it just makes tight end so much worse, which keeps Irv Smith inside the top 8 for me. But especially in Dynasty, though, like, if you have Irv Smith in Dynasty, you're probably feeling pretty good.
Yeah, dude. I mean, look, we've waited for the Irv Smith breakout. I think it's upon us. Like, I think that he's going to get the routes. He's going to get the snaps. I think that, look, you talked about that bar for tight end in fantasy is extremely low. That's why, I talked about, like, I'm a little bit lower on all these passing options. Irv Smith, I'm not moving that much because, again, that doesn't take a ton. We know that the red zone role in this passing offense, the tight ends have a ton of it, Adam. If it ain't Adam Thielen, it's the tight end position in the red zone when they do pass the ball. So, for those reasons, yeah, I'm still in on Irv, man. I'm still in on the Irv Swerve breakout. I'm here for it. I'm not backing off of him, man. The guy has talent. Legit talent. And I think that all we need is for him to get the snaps, run the routes, and we're going to see it this year, man. So moving over to another team who, look, you and I are massively in on this quarterback. The fact that this franchise got him is a huge, huge W. Justin Fields landing in Chicago, Pace and Nagy doing the right thing and making a great move, which, wow, that I never thought that those few sentences would come out of my mouth. But with Justin Fields now in the Windy City, what's his impact on this offense, Adam? I mean, what do you see the parts or pieces? How does this sift out? Is he going to be the tide that raises all ships?
Yes, as long as the Bears don't, you know, do the idiotic and start Andy Dalton in week one, which I don't know how you can. But yeah, if anybody's listened, they know that you and I both absolutely love Justin Fields. He has always been the QB2 in this draft class, closer to Trevor Lawrence than Zach Wilson, in my opinion, as a player. I don't think it's close. He's going to give this offense way more accuracy at the quarterback position. He was so accurate last year in college. Obviously gives you that mobility that they kind of didn't have because Trubisky would stop running the last couple years. And then when Nick Foles is under center, he's obviously not running. So it should open things up for David Montgomery. The question is, does that hurt him at the goal line where he was good down the stretch last year? We'll talk about him. Allen Robinson, all the jokes have been made about him playing with some of the worst quarterbacks ever, and I don't think it's a stretch to say this is already the best quarterback he's played with in his career. I don't think it's a stretch at all. So Robinson, for me, like, he kind of didn't move. Like, I might have moved him up a little bit, but, like, he was always going to get 30 to 150 targets. I just don't have anybody else to throw to in this offense. He's been great his entire career. Now he gets an upgraded quarterback. So for me, like, it's just I think it impacts Dave Montgomery potentially more than it would Allen Robinson. Like, Robinson gets more. Is he going to get more targets? Not really, but he's going to get, you know, better targets, I think, with Justin Fields under center.
I think the offense could take a massive step forward, dude. And when I say that, I mean, like, we can't get worse quarterback play than we got from Chicago last year, can we? Like, I'm sorry.
And people,
like,
and people will mention, like, Trubisky, how he ended the season last year. He was good, but it's like he's not as good as Justin Fields.
It was covering up, man. It was covering up for all of his shortcomings, man. They went really heavy play action. They went run heavy. They dumbed down the offense and asked him to basically do the simplest of things. So, like, I think that Justin Fields is going to be massive for this offense, man. Like, we know the target volume is going to be there for Allen Robinson. If the touchdowns go up anymore, I mean, he could smash as well as Darnell Mooney, dude. Like, Justin Fields.
As long as they actually trade Anthony Miller, which they've been trying to do for 7 months now.
I don't even care. Like, if Anthony Miller stays on this depth chart,
we already
doesn't
saw
really
his
matter.
Snaps down last year anyway.
He's a non-factor. Like, they don't like him. Like, he's buried, dude. There's no way that I'm worried about Anthony Miller taking any kind of production away from anybody on this squad. Like, I think that where we could see the biggest uptick is from the deep ball. Like, Justin Fields was a great deep ball passer at the collegiate level. That translates to the NFL. Allen Robinson, wheels up, baby. Darnell Mooney. Like, Adam, can we go back to, like, last year? How many times and instances on film, in replays, on highlights, do we have to see Darnell Mooney dusting fools in the secondary?
Just play the Tampa Bay game from, I think it was Thursday night.
Oh, my Lord.
Just play that game.
Dude, he's dusting cornerbacks, and the ball is going pew, pew, pew over his head. Like, it's so much production just left on the field because of bad quarterback play. And now you get Justin Fields out there just throwing dots? Man, I like the passing attack. I still think that, like, yes, Allen Robinson's ADP has gone up, but Darnell Mooney you could still get way late in drafts. I think that is where this offense takes a step forward. I think David Montgomery is still fine. I'm really kind of curious.
Do you have his ADP in front of you? Because I have concerns about Montgomery if he's being drafted relative to how he finished last year.
So, I mean, let's kind of talk about that. You know, like, while I'm getting the ADP pulled up for David Montgomery. Like, let's talk about that. Is there a way, because we all talk about it, and the low-hanging fruit is like, okay, Tariq Cohen, he's back. He's going to run routes. Is there any way, Adam, that David Montgomery reprises a three-down role and really Tariq Cohen's the one that's hurt more than David Montgomery? Like, is that possible?
I think it is. I do have concerns, though, because Montgomery led the NFL among running backs and pass routes right after Tariq Cohen went down in week three. I remember a couple years ago, it was the week one game, it was the opening game of the season against the Packers, and Tariq Cohen was used as a slot receiver. And we were all like, okay, is that going to continue? And it didn't. It was really a one-week thing. But could they just kind of play him as a slot receiver and then have Darnell Mooney and Robinson play as the receivers? Then Montgomery stays in the backfield. That's very possible. Montgomery also, like, he should be the unquestioned goal line back. Like, last year he saw 62.5% of Chicago's carries from inside the 5-yard line. That was one of the highest rates in the NFL. But what if Justin Fields is giving them a presence inside the 5-yard line? Because we know he's, with his size and skills, like, he can be a very, very, very capable touchdown scorer with his legs. So maybe that hurts him. But my whole case with Montgomery is, if his ADP isn't reflective on how he finished last year, I'm fine with him.
So right now, he is currently the RB20, RB21, depending on best ball drafts right now. Overall ADP of 39.
Then I'm perfectly fine with that. I was worried that he was going to be drafted as like a top 15-ish running back. Whereas, like, I'd rather have, you know, a lot of the players we talked about at running back already, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Dobbins, Swift. But at RB20, like, give me Montgomery over Jacobs. Give me him over Gaskin, Mike Davis. Like, that's where he should be going, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But I do think he's not going to be, like, a back-end RB1 like he was last year.
I agree. I think that he's best viewed as an RB2. My whole thing is, if you're out there in the streets doing best ball drafts right now, I don't want to get exposure to David Montgomery right now, because I think the closer we get to the season and more of redraft, like all of the redraft squad wakes up from their offseason slumber, I think David Montgomery is going to drop an ADP, Adam. Like, right now, he is going right behind Chris Carson, and he's going right above Josh Jacobs, Travis Etienne, Mike Davis, Miles Gaskin. I think the closer we get to the season, Adam, I think that's going to flip, dude. I really, really do. Like, I think that and not talking about Jacobs, because I don't think that he's going to go above David Montgomery. But the closer we get to the season, I think Travis Etienne will surpass him. I think Mike Davis, I think Miles Gaskin, all three of those guys will flip him and be going ahead of an ADP. And yeah, when
and
that
I'd rather
happens,
have Montgomery over all three of those players.
But when that happens, I think that's the point where you go ahead and you get your David Montgomery exposure. Like, if all three of those players, four players, are going ahead of David Montgomery, and he's falling to RB24, RB25, 26, where have you in drafts? I think the closer we get to the season, people are going to get hyped about certain players, especially like Travis Etienne. The consensus is going to wake up and say, okay, well, there's nobody else in Atlanta, right? I mean, Mike Davis is going to be the guy, right? Okay, well, he's got to go over David Montgomery because of the concerns. Same thing with Miles Gaskin. And so I'm not going to sit here and be drafting David Montgomery right now. What I'm looking for is the road ahead, and when he drops into high-end flex territory or even lower end RB2 territory, that's where I'm going to pounce on David Montgomery. But at his current cost, I get it, and I don't hate it, because I do think that there is a way that David Montgomery could surpass where he's being drafted right now. Like, if this is a better offense, if the offensive line, because they've got Tevin Jenkins, is better, if the mobility of Justin Fields offers more efficiency for the ground game, then again, we could see David Montgomery. I don't think it's insane, and I don't think we can totally cancel out that, like, Tariq Cohen is going to absolutely just annihilate David Montgomery's pass game usage. Is it possible and more likely? Yes.
They also had no depth at running back behind him. Like, they added Damian Williams and Khalil Herbert in the offseason. Like, that's not nothing, because who were their backups last year? Ryan Nall. Right. Like, it was brutal. And Montgomery had a huge workload down the stretch and was great. My worry was that he was going to be drafted based off that, but at RB20, RB21, that's right where I have him ranked. So I'm perfectly fine with it. I have no problems with Dave Montgomery. Just understand you're probably not getting, like, the RB whatever he finished down the stretch last year, RB4 or whatever.
Yeah, you're not getting that. That type of usage and production is not coming back, man. But another guy that we saw capitalize, routes went up, his usage went up, targets went up down the stretch, Adam. Are you in on Cole Kmet as a fantasy tight end sleeper this year? Because I know I am. Like, I know. All the Bears fans listening to us right now are eye-rolling. They're saying, and they're whispering to themselves, well, Jimmy Graham is still there. Jimmy Graham is still there. And I'm like, why do I care?
That too. Like, I don't care, but, like, why is he still there?
I mean, I think that they want the depth, man.
They gave,
like,
him
who
so
else?
Much money last year.
They did, man. And the other thing about it is, I think they just want the depth, man. He's a veteran presence. He's still good in the red zone.
Yeah, and that's where he crushed Kmet down the stretch, where Kmet was pretty much doubling him in routes run down the stretch. We're talking about him like every DFS pod because he was so cheap. He was getting like 6 targets a game down the stretch and running routes, and that's all we care about for tight ends. The problem was he was getting no goal line targets because Jimmy Graham – It was like the Dallas Goedert Zach Ertz situation, where you play one of them and you see the other one get a target in the end zone, and you think it's Ertz and it's Goddard, and you thought it was Kmet and it was Graham every time. Dude, it was very tilting.
It happened to me on multiple weeks. I remember, like, I'm at home and I'm watching the game and I'm like, touchdown!
Dude, I remember it was like Jimmy week Graham. 16. I forget who they were facing. It might have been like the Texans or something, and they drew up a perfect play where Trubisky, it was a screen to Cole Kmet. He would have walked into the end zone. Trubisky threw it in the dirt. Threw it right in the dirt.
I remember that.
And then I think Jimmy Graham scored the next, like, couple plays.
He did. He did. And I remember that exact play because I slacked you right when it happened. And I was like, no. I was freaking out, man. It was terrible. Terrible to watch. But I'm in on Cole Kmet as a sleeper this year, man, because I think that they showed us last year that the usage, they wanted that uptick. I think that repeats this year, and if anything happens to Jimmy Graham, because again, old man legs, they ain't getting younger. If he gets phased out of this offense even more, if he misses some time, if he were to get cut, like, all of these things I think are possibilities, and if that's the case, or if he just simply takes a step back and they let Kmet become a focal point in this passing offense, where he's going in drafts, which is at the very, very tail end, dude. Like, he's outside the top 170 players in best ball right now. And at that point, yes, give me the upside, man. Totally give me the upside.
I have him as a top 15 tight end.
Same. Because I think that the ceiling and the upside is there. And,
he's not competing with a lot of people for targets.
No, he's not. This is a consolidated.
It's A-Rob, and then Mooney will get his, you know. Like, Darnell Mooney's not getting 10 targets a game or anything. So, outside of that, and we already saw him running more routes than Jimmy Graham, that's more predictable than just getting a couple end zone targets a game. And there probably will be weeks where Jimmy Graham outscores him because he has 2 catches for 12 yards and a touchdown, and Kmet doesn't score. But, like, give me the routes. Just, that's all I care about for tight ends. Give me the routes.
Exactly. And I'm totally in that boat, man. Like, I think that we talked about it. Consolidated passing attack. The talent is there. They showed us they wanted the usage to uptick. I think that considering where he goes in drafts and where he'll probably continue to go in drafts, because again, Jimmy Graham is still there. I think that he's one of the best tight ends you can get at the later part of drafts, man. Moving on to the Detroit Lions. Look, whether you want to believe they signed Todd Gurley, you want to worry about Jamal Williams, your boy. What are your expectations for DeAndre Swift? Because I could definitely tell you I'm ranking him lower than consensus. I have been. I still will. This is not going to be a good offense. They are going to use multiple backs. They have showed us this. They have told us this. They are still discussing bringing in more bodies at the running back position. I'm lower on Swift than most people, man. And I don't understand where the path for his ceiling is. Like, are you in on him, or do you see the path?
The path for his ceiling is to catch 80 passes, which in this offense, with the fact that they're going to be trailing, is possible. But for me, we've talked about it. Like, at no point was DeAndre Swift a running back one in my rankings. So, like, when they added Jamal Williams, that just kind of solidified that for me because, A, it's a notable running back. B, it's Anthony Lynn, who's used multiple running backs in a ton of his offenses. And C, I love Jamal Williams. I think he's actually a good NFL player. So I think he's going to have a role. And then we had the comments come out from Anthony Lynn talking up Jamal Williams. So yeah, the girly thing I didn't care about. Like, I thought it was funny because everybody was like freaking out. Like, girly joining the Lions wouldn't be great for DeAndre Swift. But like, for me, it was more of the fact that it's a bad offense and Jamal Williams is already there. So the path for his ceiling. And the Lions scored a ton of running back touchdowns last year. They're not repeating that again, especially with their offense likely to be much worse. The path is for him to literally catch, you know, have an Alvin Kamara-type receiving season. But the touchdowns are going to be limited, I think, especially if Jamal Williams takes work away. So whereas a lot of people probably have DeAndre Swift as like a top 10 running back, he's my RB 15, and I might actually move him to 16 behind Clyde. So I think we both are lower than consensus on DeAndre Swift. Not as a player, he was my top running back in this draft class, which says how much I like him when it's Jonathan Taylor and Cam Akers in this draft class. But the situation is not as good as people make it out to be.
No, I think that if you're buying into DeAndre Swift, for me, it's that you're buying into really, really good offensive line play. But
yeah, that too. Their offensive line is or on the checkdowns incredible.
Like, but the thing about it is that, like, yes, the offensive line play can be good, but if the quarterback play is still bad, the wide receiver play is not good enough to sustain drives, get them in the red zone consistently. I mean, my whole thing is that, like, what are we talking about here? Did we see Jared Goff checking down a ton last year? Did that happen, Adam? Like, I know Todd Gurley garnered a lot of looks out of the passing in the passing game previously in Los Angeles. But if targets are earned, yes, is Swift a good receiver? But Jamal Williams is not dust in that department. Like, he's going to catch passes too.
Listen, I've said it so many times, and I'll say it again. Jamal Williams is a much better player than 90% of the fantasy community thinks he is. That's just facts. Yep. Like, is Jamal Williams a top 20 running back in the NFL in terms of talent? No. But he's just very solid in every aspect. He's good enough at breaking tackles. He's very good in pass protection. He's an above average pass catcher. Like, I understand we wanted Aaron Jones to get 30 touches a game, but a huge part of it brings a smile to my face because I love the guy, but Jamal Williams is good. He's going to play.
I don't disagree with you, man, and that's why, again, head over to FTM Fantasy, check on my ranks, scroll down the list and see where DeAndre Swift is. You got a problem with it? Hit me up on Twitter. Slide into those mentions. It's all good, man. Like,
everybody has an opinion. If you think DeAndre Swift is a top 10 running back, that's not outlandish. He's very good. And I will say, you hinted towards it, the offensive line on paper is elite. I mean, if Penei Sewell is who we think he's going to be as a prospect, you have an offensive line consisting of Sewell, Frank Ragnow at center, who's elite. Jonah Jackson's a very quality left guard who's still young. They are very, very good. The problem, of course, is and Taylor Decker at left tackle, who, like, Matthew Stafford last year was under duress on 28.5% of his dropbacks, according to PFF. That was his lowest mark since 2012. So this is a very good offensive line.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, I think the offensive line is going to be fantastic. It's just how much can that prop up so many different parts of pieces, and the concern that this front office has shown us they still want to add more bodies to the running back position. But over to the pass catching department, man, I know we've talked about it in previous shows. How high are you on TJ Hockenson, and is there anybody else that you're willing to target?
So I have Hockenson. I'm really going back and forth between him and Mark Andrews for my tight end four. Hockenson's ceiling for targets could be right behind Waller and Kelsey. Like, he could get that many targets this year. He had over 100 last year. He could get to 120 this year. And if he does, given how bad tight end is, he's got top three upside. Like, George Kittle is an incredible player, but like, Kittle's volume could be a little bit concerning in a run first offense with Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel there. And apparently who knows if they get Julio. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the top three tight ends at season's end were Kelsey, Waller, and then TJ Hockenson, just based off volume.
Yeah, I mean, look, for me, I think that Hockenson, you at least have to consider the range of outcomes that he could be up there. Because the volume, look, they got nobody else, man. Like, I know, and I'm going to bring up Amon Ross St. Brown here in a second. But TJ Hockenson could get a ton of targets. And especially, you're talking about, look, Jared Goff is allergic to throwing the ball outside the numbers. He will not fit it into tight windows. He is not going to sit here and throw into those contested situations, which is good for TJ Hockenson. He's going to operate over the middle of the field. He's going to be that check down option. And with that being said, like, I think his ceiling is immense this year, man. But again, moving over to Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's the only other pass catcher that I want out of this offense. I'm sorry. I know that people are out on Twitter talking about Tyrell Williams. No, thank you.
I hate going to this because it's like a cop-out. But in all seriousness, in best ball, sure, Tyrell and Breshad Perriman, they make sense.
No, they don't. I'll push back. I don't think they do, man. No, like, they don't. They do not fit with this quarterback. Like, they don't, man. Like, Jared Goff is not going to push the ball outside to these wide receivers, dude. Tyrell Williams, like, I get he, like, there are truthers that are still out there. Like, he had some productive years. You really bought into and thought, like, okay, now he's going to be fully unleashed because he went to the Raiders. All of that time has passed. You got to let go of that. Same thing with the Breshad Perriman, man. Like, I know that they flash talent and stuff like that. This is not the quarterback to accentuate their talents.
And Breshad Perriman had that breakout in Tampa Bay with no Mike Evans and no Chris Godwin and an offense that just was all downfield passing. So definitely more interested in Tyrell than Perriman. I don't think Tyrell's just going to be a straight up just run streaks type player, but Perriman probably will be. So, yeah. But yeah, like, I'm not in on it, man.
I'm on Roz
the dude. He's always been the dude for me. So 50.7% of Jared Goff's pass attempts last year were of the short variety. It was a top five rate in the league. That's going to be majority of where Amon-Ra's routes are going to be. He's going to play. Apparently, there was a report that he's going to play out all over the field, which that's good. But I think we want him to play primarily in the slot. We've talked about it for months of how they are missing that, you know, slot receiver that can win in the intermediate routes and intermediate parts of the field. That's where Amon-Ra is going to win. So he could easily be the number two player in targets on this team. I've been higher on him as a prospect than a lot of other people. I like him in this fit with Jared Goff. Is it the best quarterback play? No, but given what Jared Goff likes to do and where Amon-Ra wins, I think it's a good match for him to get decent volume in year one.
Well, and Chris Meany and I just talked about this. You need to go check out his podcast. Go check out the YouTube show. FTN Fantasy is on YouTube. Dude, we talked about this, man. His ADP in high stakes leagues is criminal right now. Like, he is in the outside the wide receiver 70 range. Wide receiver 75, 76 in so many drafts, man.
Wow.
And at that spot, it's insanity. Like, I think that it's free, easy money at that spot because you talked about it. Jared Goff is going to pepper the middle of the field. That's where Amon-Ra is going to play on most of his snaps. I think that unless there is an injury to Tyrell Williams or Perriman, I think he's going to be their starting slot wide receiver. And that is the outside of Hockenson. It's really him and Hockenson, and that's the only parts of this offense that I want. I'm not going to pay the ADP price for DeAndre Swift. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Twitter, but I do not see the ceiling for him and where he's going right now, he would have to drop for me to sit here and consider it. And you look at Hockenson, middle of the rounds. You look at Amon-Ra, the back of drafts. That's all day equity, dude.
Would you take Jamal Williams late?
Yeah, I would consider him. I mean, especially if you're looking at like possibly going like in best ball, you're going anchor RB, you're waiting, or he's one of the last running backs.
Yeah,
you're going,
that's
like,
where
five,
I've taken a lot of Jamal Williams. If I take like an elite running back first and then just load up on receivers and tight ends, and Jamal Williams is kind of there.
Yeah, kind of where I don't him. Disagree. I don't disagree with that at all, man. I think that he's a fine pick where he's going, because the other thing that we haven't discussed here yet is that if anything happens to DeAndre Swift, if they don't sign Todd Gurley, who the hell is going to take volume away from him, man? I'm sorry, Jamar Jefferson? Nah, he ain't coming for that volume, dude. Who's taking volume away from Jamal Williams, man? Who?
Right. By the way, top 10 player I would love to get on the podcast, Jamal Williams, without question.
I met him in real life at a few fantasy conferences, man. The dude is hilarious. He's funny. Just a general, all-around nice guy, man. I'd be massively in for that dude. All right, that's so good. Before we get up out of here, the NFC North, man, give me a breakout, give me a bust. Who you going with?
Breakout. We got to stay on brand, right?
Yes.
Irv Smith, let's get it. Yes. Kyle Rudolph's gone. The offense is going to be good. I'm all about it. For a bust, kind of tough, because like I originally thought Dave Montgomery, but his ADP really doesn't reflect that. Like, he's not going as high as I thought he would go. I guess I can cheat and say Aaron Jones if Aaron Rodgers isn't there. But I'll also add that I think it's possible that Dave Montgomery could still be underwhelming. Just depends on what the offense looks like.
This
division's kind of tough because, like, the Lions, I guess you're going to go DeAndre Swift, huh?
Yep, that's where I'm going. I'm going DeAndre Swift as my bust. I'm with on Irv as the breakout. If we wanted to get a second player in here, I think it's Darnell Mooney for me for the breakout. I think that the passing volume, it's consolidated. I think the deep passing is going to go up, be more efficient in Chicago. So if it's not Irv, it's Mooney for me. And yeah, dude, look, I just don't see it, man. I mean, look, DeAndre Swift right now in current best balls is going as the RB15, RB16. I've seen people draft him even a little bit higher than that. And I can't. I just can't. 26th overall, I can't do that, man. At that price, like, uh-uh. Like, you're hoping and praying that he has a higher ceiling. I mean, because at RB14, RB15, you're saying, okay, there's still equity to be had because he could be an RB1. And I just don't see it, man. For all the reasons we've stated here, I don't see that ceiling. I don't see the increased equity. He would literally have to be the dude, and that's what you're paying for. And I think Jamal Williams is going to be a massive thorn in the side for everybody that pays that price for DeAndre Swift. Just give me Jamal Williams late, or I'm out of it, man. All right, everyone, that is the NFC North. Again, Adam and I are diving into more of these division previews as we get closer to the NFL season. And hey, we got a special guest later this week, man. Mike Wright from the Fantasy Footballers is stopping by the podcast. We are going to go through a mock draft with Mike on air. It's going to be lit. It's going to be fantastic. All kinds of fireworks, man. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.